This is Radio Occupy. I'm Dan.
And I'm Matthew Horn.
And we are going to be talking about the nature of war and global injustice. And yeah, so Matt, if you want to kick us off.
Tell us about yourself. So my name's Matthew Horn. I'm a former soldier of the British Army, who now campaigns against war and wants to seek justice for those that have been a victim of war. And, you know, mainstream media these days only talk about those that have died in the British Army, and they barely touch on those, you know, that have died as a result of war. So they'll talk about, you know, a bomb's gone off and 23 people have died. But they will never ever show what 23 people who've been blown up really looks like. So in this country, we're all sort of hidden away. It's censored and it just makes us all blind to the reality of the world that we live in.
I mean, we've also kind of got a romantic notion and a narrative which is spun, which is telling us that these courses of violence are necessary, they're heroic. And so what's your experience of the actual reality of that narrative?
Well, firstly, I can say that, you know, I worked in the ops room in Basra. I was there for 8 months. I got access to a lot of information, whether it be in the form of documents or in the form of visual representation on screens showing Predators, which is the drones, Apache gunships, Spectra gunships, which is basically a plane that has a lot of firepower strapped to the side of it and can pretty much decimate an entire area very quickly. And you're right, there's this heroic notion that war is honorable, that, you know, we should honor those that go to war, and that we should, you know, support our troops, which, you know, in a way, we should. But if only we knew the reality of what we're actually supporting, if the mainstream media were to tell the truth about what we are doing and what was going on out there, especially on the American side, they were more or less, well, they were less humane than we were. I remember a few incidents, especially one in particular, and this is what completely changed my mind about mainstream media, especially the BBC, was an incident involving a house that had suspected terrorists. And bear in mind, the word suspected is used throughout the entire war. It was the war itself was based on suspicion of weapons of mass destruction. And, you know, we were told that, you know, a terrorist, that's all we were told, but we were never taught what the definition of a terrorist is or what it actually means. And we were told that, you know, we were going there to liberate and to save these people from this, you know, god-awful man, Saddam Hussein. But I felt, while I was there, that we simply turned into not just one, you know, one dictator. We turned into thousands of dictators. We told them what to do, what to think, how to go about their daily life. We instigated what the government did. And going back to the house, when the house was suspected of harboring terrorists, there was no question, no, you know, no absolute proof. They simply bombed it. And then it came on the mainstream media that, you know, we'd killed several terrorists. But from what other sources of media showed, especially in the Middle East, because they don't censor the news like we do. They will show it as pretty much how it is. And it showed lots of bodies just lying around, and there was no weapons. There was women, children, elderly people, and some men. And to me, it was basically just, you know, we just bombed someone's house and killed their entire family.
And so how do you think we can relate better to those people? How do you think we can bring justice about for those people? Is that even possible with what's been done to them?
For me, I think that no matter how many years go by, it is going to be very, very hard for them to forgive us for what we've done. And I think the best course of action that we can do is to show them that it's not us. It's not us as people. It's not us as the people of this nation. But it is, in fact, our governments, corporations, financial institutions. It's their interests that caused that situation. It's not the people's interest. It's not in our interest to go to war. We're the ones that pay the price. We pay the price through our taxes, through, you know, through continuing to conduct ourselves and supporting what, you know, supporting the troops itself is supporting the war. And we've stepped away from this idea that war is a terrible thing. You know, World War II happened, you know, and we got bombed in this country. We were attacked on our own land, and did we like it? No, we most certainly did not. So what's the difference when we go and invade someone else's land? Bear in mind, the Iraq war was 100% illegal. There was no UN mandate. It was heavily opposed by the majority of the people in this country. And I think one of the major problems in this country is simply due to censorship, which most people here are not even aware of. The amount of censorship that goes on. But due to that, we were hidden away from the reality of what was really going on. Corporations were robbing and continue to rob the nation to this day. Private security just wreaked havoc across the cities. And, you know, when it boils down to it, they simply sent poor people to go and kill poor people. That's what it is based on. That is the basic, most simplest reality of the whole thing. Poor people killing poor people for the gain of the top and most wealthy people in the world.
With that, I think we move on to one of your choices of songs, which is
This one's called "Hands Held High" by Linkin Park. I selected this one because I believe that the words in the song are quite powerful. A lot of Western music is very powerful in its meaning, but you know, if only we actually understood or even took the time to fully understand what the music means. But here it is anyway. This is Linkin Park, "Hands Held High."
Turn my mic up louder, I got to say something. Lightweight, step it aside when we come in. Feel feel it in your chest, the syllables get pumping. People on the street can panic and start running. Words on loose leaf sheet, complete coming. I jump on my mind, I summon the rhyme I'm dumping. Healing the blind, I promise to let the sun in. Sick of the dark ways, we march to the drumming. Jump when they tell us that they wanna see jumping. Fuck that, I wanna see some fist pumping. Risk something, take back what's yours. Say something that you know they might attack you for. Cause I'm sick of being treated like I had before. Like it's stupid standing for what I'm standing for. Like this war's really just a different brand of war. Like it doesn't cater to rich and a fandom poor. Like they understand you in the back of the jet when you can't put gas in your tank. These fuckers are laughing away to the bank and cashing a check, asking you to have compassion and have some respect for a leader so nervous in an obvious way, stuttering and mumbling for nightly news to replay, and the rest of the world watching at the end of the day in the living room laughing like, what did he say? When it gets tense, I know what might happen. World is cold, the bold men take action. Have to react to get blown into fractions. 10 years old or something to see. Another kid my age, drug under a Jeep. Taken and bound and found later under a tree. I wonder if he thought the next one could be me. Do you see the soldiers that are out today to brush the dust from bulletproof vests away? It's ironic, at times like this you pray, but a bomb blew the mosque up yesterday. There's bombs on the buses, bikes, roads, inside your market, your shops, your clothes. My dad has got a lot of fear, I know, but enough pride inside not to let that show. My brother had a book he would hold with pride, a little red cover with a broken spine on the back. He hand wrote a quote inside, when the rich wage war, it's the poor who die. Meanwhile, the leader just talks away, stuttering and mumbling for nightly news to replay. The rest of the world watching at the end of the day, both scared and angry like, what did he say?
That was Linkin Park, Hands Held High. And so kind of going back to what you were talking about before, about our notions of war, and we seem to have a out of sight, out of mind mentality. What would you recommend? Where would you say people should look in order to kind of gain a comprehension of this? I mean, I read a book when I was about 22. I bought a book which was about war crimes, and it was a photographic kind of journalist piece, along with a lot of the definitions and a lot of the historical implications for many people, and it was a really insightful kind of guide. Where can people kind of, if they wish to kind of look, where can they find the actual imagery of war, the uncensored imagery of war?
Well, the internet itself is a powerful tool. The internet has actually paved way for a lot of information that the governments have not wanted us to see. The first thing you should probably do is turn your TV off. Because I don't know how many people understand this or know, but the government has a department called the Behavioral Insights Team. And their job is to manipulate public opinion, is to manipulate how you see the world in order for them to pass legislation or for them to make something that would seemingly be an absolute disgrace or completely atrocious or even, you know, going as far as committing mass war crimes and make that seem like it's the right thing or the righteous thing to do, that we are doing the right thing, that they are the enemy and they are the ones in the wrong. Now, you know, going back to the Iraq war, I see no way or no reason of how they could possibly ever have been a direct threat to this country. And if I had my way, I would enshrine it within law that the only possible way we could ever go to war is when the will of the people demand it. And I don't mean, you know, that's what people want in this country, because naturally, in human instinct, we don't want war. It benefits no one. But if we enshrined it into law that the governments cannot, like they did in Iraq, go to war without the will of the people and without backing of the people and basically just tell a blatant lie, I think if we opened everything up to absolute scrutiny and we get the absolute hard facts by independent people, we can certainly limit or even get rid of it altogether. How can you go to war if it is enshrined within law that when you must, you know, ascertain all the information, put it together, and then allow your people to decide? And I would say that almost absolutely 100% of the time, we would say no. We made that clear during the Iraq war. Tony Blair ignored us, just like the government today ignores us now. And what did it lead to? Led to the death of 1.4 million people, mostly women and children. How can a child be a terrorist, you know?
And I would also like just to kind of chat about, kind of say, our justice system. And we've just gone through the court case where they're trying to, well, where the judge has actually said that we're causing a nuisance and it's in the public interest to move this camp. Whereas we did actually give reports and give evidence to show these crimes against humanity which have been caused, yet the law didn't necessarily recognise the evidence that we gave. They didn't even acknowledge the fact that this is one of the fundamental reasons why we have come here and why we are camping out here, in order to bring justice about for these people, or at least acknowledgement and a change in attitude and action towards towards other countries. What do you think it says about the nation and the attitude of governments towards other people when such atrocities occur?
A nuisance. I'll tell you what a nuisance is. A nuisance is dropping a 2,000-pound bomb on someone's home and then killing someone's women, you know, their wife, their children. We don't want, you know, how would you like it if someone dropped a bomb on your home, killed your child? If someone attacks your child, how would you feel? You would feel, you know, as a most basic human instinct to defend yourself and to defend your family. So when someone, you know, it's okay for us to go and drop a bomb on their house and kill their children and kill their parents. But, you know, as soon as they fight back and attack us and one of us dies, it's a national tragedy. We shouldn't have even been there. Our politicians lie. Our government sends us to wars so that those at the top, such as corporations, financial institutions, can make enormous profits out of it. And then the people of this country are completely lied to. And then, you know, people just go around and they say, oh, well, you know, they're doing the right thing. That, or, you know, people walk past here and say to me, get a job. And it's like, I have a job, thank you. I'm doing possibly one of the best jobs in the world, which is to inform people of the reality of the world that we are living in, that it is not this, you know, righteous place where we all live together all happily. Just because Europe's been in peace for the last 60 years doesn't mean the rest of the world's been at peace. We've advocated so many wars. America has been at war for something like 209 years out of its 239 years of existence. How can we go around and say they're the terrorists, they're the enemy, they're the ones that are doing the wrong thing, when it is us? We are the terrorists. We are the ones going around bombing and killing millions and millions of people around the world. The government is lying. The mainstream media won't tell the truth. They dare not show it, because if they do, they will be shut down. We can see that with Press TV. You know, they were shut down because they were speaking against what the government was saying. You know, the BBC does it sometimes, but it is never enough. Why won't they show the truth? Why won't they show us the actual reality? Why won't they do that?
I mean, I can hazard a guess that it wouldn't be popular. It would make, I mean, like, we watched some segments, a film, a short video on YouTube, which showed lots of the pictures of the horrors of war, and a lot of children who had been killed, and I would go as far as saying murdered. I would also say that, you know, for people to face that reality,
I would say for absolute certainty that they were murdered. There's not even a possibility. They were murdered. That's the reality of it.
And it seems that there is no recourse within our justice system, even if you were to go through Parliament to lobby Parliament, there is no means or way to actually address these issues.
That's because the government is bought. People think that just because we get to vote once every 5 years that we have a democracy. That's not a democracy. A democracy is when the government does what the people wish it to do, that it represents the people, that when major legislation is put through Parliament, that we should have a vote. You know, when the government is talking about going to war to stop a apparent great evil, that we should have a vote. We should be allowed to assess and analyse the situation ourselves. We don't need them to tell us how to think, how we should feel. And, you know, the court case for Occupy London, after I stood up there and read out countless numbers of incidents, as well as talking in general about the system as a whole and how it advocates war. It's designed and geared up for war. That's why we have been in a sustained war non-stop since most of our existence, at least for the last 300 years. And for him to just turn around and completely ignore all of that just says so much to me, that there is no justice in this country. There's no justice anywhere that is right, that is the right thing. And the only way that justice will come is when enough people say no.
And what would you say kind of culturally, what makes us so accepting of this? I mean, we did talk about the heroic narrative, but what would you say are the things which support that heroic narrative?
I'll tell you about heroism, or, you know, the heroic narrative. If you can answer this question, and I offer you to do so, you know, what is heroic about busting someone's door down in the middle of the night, dragging them out, dragging the husband away, terrifying the children, terrifying the women, dragging the husband away, taking them away, terrorizing them, demanding that, you know, answers to impossible questions that they clearly have no answers to, and demanding and beating them into submission until the point where they literally just agree with whatever you're saying. And then you can say to everyone, oh, look, we got a terrorist.
Okay, well, let's move on now. We've got the next track, which is by Muse, and what's it called?
No, this one's... I wanted to put this one in first, which is a speech by Colonel Tim Collins. He was the man that led the initial invasion into Iraq. He was a member of the Irish Guards. And this speech, to me, is, you know, personally why I joined up, as well as my own sort of background situation, which I, you know, I've said in, on the website. But this speech itself just says it all. This is what we were led to believe, and this is what some of us believed, that why we were going. And, you know, if you just listen to the words and listen to what he says, you know, he shows a great deal of respect for this country.
We are going into Iraq to liberate and not to conquer. We will not fly our flags in their country. Now, there are some who are alive at this moment who will not be alive shortly. Those of them who do not wish to go on that journey, we will not send them. As for the others, I expect you to rock their world. Wipe them out, if that's what they choose. If you are ferocious in battle, remember to be magnanimous in victory. Iraq is steeped in history. It is the site of the Garden of Eden, of the Great Flood. It is the birthplace of Abraham. You tread lightly there. You'll have to go a long way to find a more decent, generous, and upright people than the Iraqis. You'll be embarrassed at the hospitality they offer you, even though they have nothing. Do not treat them as refugees in their own country. Now, if there are casualties of war, remember that when they got up this morning and got dressed, they did not plan to die this day. So allow them dignity in death. Bury them with due reverence and properly mark their graves. It remains my foremost intention to bring every single one of you out alive. But there may be those among us who will not see the end of this campaign. And we will put them in their sleeping bags and we will send them back, and there will be no time for sorrow. We will grieve for them later. The enemy should be in no doubt that we are his nemesis and we are bringing about his rightful destruction. But remember, it is a big step to take another human life. It is not to be done lightly. I know of men who have taken life needlessly in other conflicts. I can assure you, they live with the mark of Cain upon them. And I know your mas will be in the queue at the co-op next week, and they won't want you to let them down. Let's bring everybody home safely and leave Iraq a better place for us having been there. Our business now is north. Good luck.
That's it, fellas.
Follow.
So that was the speech by Colonel Tim Collins, who just a year later left the military as a result of the government's policy and the way in which Iraq was heading. You know, he says in the speech, "We are going to Iraq to liberate and not conquer." And we conquered and occupied. He talks about, you know, we will not fly our flag in their country. We did. We put it up everywhere we went. And, you know, this is the situation which we've seen time and time again, and now we've got the build up to the Iran war that's very much every day becoming a possibility. And this whole idea, you know, they use fear in order to get you to agree with them that what we're about to do is the right thing. And we saw that fear with the weapons of mass destruction. We see the fear now that they're trying to create nuclear weapons again, which is a weapons of mass destruction. So they're basically using the same methods, the same tactics, and using different words in order to do it. And the way that politicians play with words, it's like the time when Gordon Brown stood in Parliament and said, you know, banging his fist on the table saying, "I have just increased helicopters by 100%. I mean, that sounds great. Until someone stood up and said, "Well, how many helicopters do we have?" And he wouldn't answer. So they did some research. We had four. He basically bought four helicopters and sounded like he'd done something that was, you know, had never been done before. And it's this play of words that they use, as well as the play of the media and the play of entertainment that they throw at us, that makes us feel like we are doing the right thing and that everything is okay, when 90% of the world is being screwed by our actions, by our ignorance, and the fact that we're just continuing to refuse to accept that there is nothing wrong.
I just wanted to take it like to zoom out, as it were, and to look at the picture where, what is war used for? It seems to me that it's part of a process that has been used time and time and time again. What's your understanding of that process, and where does war fit in to it?
To me, almost every war that has been fought, especially since World War II, has been based on resources. It's been based on profit, even though they don't say that directly, but war is extremely profitable. And, you know, they call it the military-industrial complex. But what they don't tell you is that its actual real name is the military-political-industrial complex. It is a combination of politics and military might that together we have created, we've stepped away from colonialism, imperialism. What we did is step into economic imperialism. They say we abandoned slavery. What we did is just take that slavery from our own country and just enslave people in their own country. We advocate empowering dictators across the world. We saw that with Gaddafi. Gaddafi was once a friend of the West. You know, you see in the famous picture of him hugging Tony Blair. Only, 10 years down the line, we're bombing him. And the only reason we did that is because once in Libya, they monitored very heavily what was going on. And once they realized that the government had no possible way of winning, that's when our government stepped in, switched sides, and, lo and behold, we have a continuation of oil contracts. And in fact, we got better oil contracts as a result.
Yeah, I read an article in the Evening Standard which was saying that British businesses are encouraged to go to Libya. There's £200 billion worth of contracts up for grabs. And so it seems to me like these wars or whatever you are a long-term aim of sustaining resource flow into various countries, especially oil-based societies. And actually the heroic narrative which is spread is just really a means to recruit and to make people ease their conscience to the actual human life and human suffering which incurs as a result.
Well, what we've done is build a nation you know, mainly here and in the United States, which has built an economy based on war and debt and finance. You know, we spread debt, we buy debt and sell it off at a higher interest rate. We also then advocate wars across nation after nation. But if you notice, each time a war is about to wrap up, we're already in process of creating the diplomatic meltdown on another nation, ready to put them in a situation, spin the media, and say, these are the enemy, these are the real threat of the world. They said that with Iraq, they said that with those before them, and before that, and before that, and before that. How many times must we walk the same path? All we're doing is going round in circles, and they just use different words each time, and everyone else goes home, you know, and says to me, what I'm doing is, you know, I'm wasting my time. I'm an insult to the name of calling myself a veteran. And it's all, you know, you just get perpetually bombarded with abuse for trying to do the right thing. And I just think, what level or what, how much TV or how much media or how much, you know, media spins and political jargon have you been fed in order for you to so strongly believe what you're saying, that you believe that the world is okay, that, oh, yeah, the world's not, you know, not everything's great, but we're great in this country, it's great, it's brilliant, not knowing that over 25% of the country's in poverty, that people are losing their homes on a daily basis. So I have this theory that, you know, we live in a triangle, a diamond-shaped system. The system is the same at the top, and it uses two methods in which to essentially enslave the population of the world, which is, one goes down the path of through war and basically outright attacking a nation for its resources and to extract its wealth. And the second one is what they're doing here. They're robbing and extracting resources from every single household across the nation. What is the difference between when you bomb someone's home, you lose your kids, you lose your family, you've lost your house, you've got no livelihood, you've got no job? What position are you left in? And that is the bottom side of the diamond. And then we go to the other side and say, right, the banks take your home. Social services take your children because they find you inadequate to look after them, because you can't get a job, because there are no jobs, because big corporations, financial institutions are hoarding enormous amounts of money and extracting it from each household. What position are you left in? You're in the same situation. You've got nothing. So that is why people like me and people that have come down here to occupy, we don't fear them anymore. We don't have any fear because we have nothing to lose. First thing people must do is realize that if everyone in this country decided, right, we're no longer going to pay our mortgage, what are you going to do? Are they really going to take every single person's home off them and throw them onto the streets? That's not going to happen, because everyone's going to, you know, there will be nothing left, because everyone will be in such outrage. And if everyone really knew the true scale of the corruption and devastation that we have caused and these people have caused, people would be so outraged. And that is why the mainstream media are being so heavily subdued and censored into the information that they allow you to have.
And along with that, kind of people, if people did kind of throw away their fear of not having security, that in turn would empower the nation, as it were, to move towards a collective will of realizing what that might be. What other actions do you think? You said one about the mass mortgages. What other actions do you think would be a good idea in order to drive us towards a more peaceful, sustainable way of living?
Well, their system relies on fear. It relies on you to be so scared to go against the status quo. Because if you do that, you're at risk then of losing your home, or losing your car, or losing your TV, or going to jail. But if everyone in the country stood up and said, we're not going to take this anymore, we're not going to let you spend our money on killing millions of people, we're not going to let you use our name in order to do what you say is the right thing, where we say it's the wrong thing. And that's what everyone in this country needs to do, is to stand up and say, not in our name. Believe me, if we go to war with Iran, it will not be like Iraq. It will not be, we go there, we bomb them, we rob them of everything, and then we, you know, we come home. It'll be more along the lines of, we'll bomb them, they will strike back. Russia will, China, and other nations. If we're not careful in the West, one day it will come, because it will turn. The tides will eventually turn, and the rest of the world will not treat us with kindness. I can assure you of that. And our ignorance is going to be so detrimental to us in the future. And we must ensure, you know, we all want to ensure that our children live in a sustainable and safe environment. So let's provide them with that environment. Let's take them. Let's start to build connections and talk to people. Get online. Get on the internet. Talk to people from around the world. And if you look deep enough and talk to them on a genuine level, put your prejudice aside and just talk to them without thinking that you are superior or better than them, you will find that they are no different to you. They are the same. They're human beings. They feel the same things you do. They feel that they want to protect their family, their children. They want to give their children the best possible upbringing they can. And that's only going to happen when we in the West stand up and put an end to this global corruption in which we have burst out onto the world. People got to remember that it started here, right here, in this square mile. And this is where it must end. This is where it needs to stop.
Okay, thanks for that. Let's just talk about kind of, what do you think it is that Occupy kind of offers for people that is different than any other movements which have gone on? I mean, there's War on Wants, there's Stop the War Coalition. What is the difference with this one than, say, other organizations?
Well, this one is different because for the first time in the history of mankind, in a very short amount of time, we've had an almost universal awakening, that for the first time we've stood up and started questioning what is going on around us almost simultaneously, from whether it be the Middle East to South America, America, Australia, United States, Asia. I mean, there's currently uprisings going on in China that people don't even know about. The Spanish uprising has been going since the 15th of May, was it? Nobody even knew about it. That's right within our, you know, so-called continent. And we didn't even know about it. This is, you know, how heavily people have got to connect and communicate with people from around the world, and they'll quickly realize that the news we get is not quite so, you know, open and fruitful as we actually believe or led to believe. We get, you know, BBC World says that it goes around the world and gets all the latest news and everything. Well, why isn't it reported on the 2,600 different occupiers that are currently going on in almost every country in the world, apart from those that are so heavily suppressed that, you know, even to think in the wrong way can lead to the loss of your life? And even then, in some of those countries, they're still standing up. So I would say the biggest, most significant change to Occupy is that it is global. It's a mass awakening of people saying, we're not going to take this anymore, and we want to do something about it. And only if people got to realize that true power lies within every single one of us. The Occupy movement has no specific headquarters or specific space that we can call you know, like this is where all the leaders are. Because the way I look at it in military terms is that each camp is like a forward operating base, and the headquarters lies within every single one of us. If they want to stop this movement, then they're going to have to be prepared to put every single one of us in jail. They're going to have to be prepared to shut the internet down. And believe me, if they shut the internet down, there'll be a lot more, you know, we'll be the least of their problems. I can assure you of that.
So could you tell us a little bit about what work you've been doing here in the tech tent? You've also got your website, and you've also got your map of injustice. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how people can help out?
Yeah, sort of, I mean, this is me being very truthful. Through somewhat limitations on the media, you know, like the press releases that we were putting out, I felt that it wasn't enough information. Perhaps many do feel that it's enough, but personally, on a personal level, I felt that it wasn't. And I wanted to show people a much darker, deeper, and more realistic image and picture of the world, so that people can see just how messed up it is and just how much injustice there is, and it's all caused. And the only reason that it continues is because of our silent obedience to the system that we live in, just because we're all right. There's nothing, there's no difference between someone in Africa who's in poverty and someone in this country who's in poverty, in the sense of, I'm not, in the sense of slavery. The only difference is that over here, we're slaves with stuff. We have stuff. And that stuff is there to suppress us. In Africa, they're suppressed by the gun. We're suppressed by the enjoyment of playing on an iPod or on our computers. And because I wanted to show the reality of the whole situation, I looked around the internet and looked for sort of imagery that would show me, it's like a true scale of things, like a map of some sort, and I couldn't find anything that showed anything like that. And so we decided to build our own map, and we called it the Map of Injustice. And we want people to send us information, and we will do the research. I wouldn't worry for yourself. We will take that burden and put it out there. We will find out, and we will end up with all this accumulated information of just how dark the world is. But I think it's incredibly important that we show people with a simple visual perspective, with simple bullet points of figures, numbers, and basic information. And out of that, they can see a much bigger picture of what is really going on in the world in living memory. That is the key part. It's one of the only rules, is that it is in living memory, and that it has been something that has been significant, that has been forgotten, and there's been no justice for it. And if you go to the website, wenemw.org, and click on the Map of Injustice at the top, there's a form that you can fill in, and you send us that information. Through that, we will then research it, and we will then put it out there, and we hope that it will continue to grow. And sadly, towards the end, the map will end up being purely red, full of dots everywhere, because there has been so much that has gone unnoticed. The United Nations has not convicted that many people of genocide, and yet there's been more cases of genocide than we would be led to believe.
On that note, you can also get more information on occupylsx.org. You can also email radiooccupy@hotmail.com, where you can send in your own podcasts, and we'll be happy to look at your submissions and also put them up on the website.
Also, you can follow us on Twitter at WhenEMW. That's our Twitter account. My Twitter is at MattEMW. And also, I work for another organization called Veterans for Peace UK. You can follow that on veteransforpeace.org.uk. And now we have just one more song that we'd like to play. I first listened to this when I saw the Spanish Indignados with their uprising that happened over there, and it's still going on to a degree right now, just not in the conventional form that it was before. This is Uprising by Muse.